Welcome to Entrepreneurhood, where we break entrepreneurship down into three simple pillars: business, lifestyle, and motivation. Our goal is to use our personal experiences as industry leaders to guide and inspire young entrepreneurs to see the lesson in every challenge. Because we understand that companies don't succeed, people do. Now, welcome the leaders of Entrepreneurhood, Lakim and KB.
Welcome to the neighborhood. This is episode 14. You got your boy Lakim in the building, and I got my brother KB in the building with me. This episode is just continuing to get better and better, man. KB, he's been on a roll, and he's finding guests left and right. I think he got the eye for talent, and we found a real good entrepreneur that we think is going to bring a lot of value to our listeners. He's from New York City. KB got a bio and a background on who this entrepreneur is. So, KB, who's the guest for today?
Well, first, I had to say, man, I had to get in my bag again. This is why he used to call me Diddy in high school. You know, I like to find the talent. I like to bring it to the forefront, introduce it to the people. Today, we have our first doctor entrepreneur. Yes, I said doctor. At 25 years old, his age doesn't even correlate with the amount of success he has so far. Today's guest is a doctor of physical therapy who has worked with Major League Baseball team San Francisco Giants. He has two running companies, Savage Ruthless and Swag Rag, that has the young people going crazy. He's a massive online sales and a branding specialist. Ladies and gents, welcome Malik Morris, a.k.a. Dr. Guapo, to the neighborhood.
What's going on with y'all? Happy to be here.
What's good, bro? What's good?
Yeah, thanks for taking the time getting me up here.
Yo, this is crazy, man. This is the first doctor we're into the neighborhood.
Oh, man, yo, and it's crazy, too. Like, between me and you right now, I might be retired. But I guess we'll get into that in a little bit.
That's an entrepreneurhood exclusive right there.
Nobody really knows that yet. I haven't even told my place of work that I'm not going back. This whole corona situation changed my life for the better, honestly.
Let's start from the beginning, man. Where did the first size of entrepreneurship come from?
Honestly, I would say it all started with football. I played football my whole life growing up. Well, I actually started football in fifth grade. My mom didn't want me playing before that because she was like scared I was going to get hurt. My dad was a coach, and I came from Queens, so I used to play for Springfield Rifles. My dad was the coach for the Rifles. Yeah.
Yeah, I played for the Rifles too. Yeah.
You know, well, you probably won't know Coach Ramos. He only coached like 1 or 2 years, but he was one of the coaches with like Rufus, Barnett.
Bro, we know all of those people. KB was on the opposite side. I think he was the Rosedale Jets.
Oh, no. Nah,
I was.
He was on the losing team. Rifles is always the winners. It's crazy, too. If I didn't move to Long Island, I would have went to Campus Magnet.
Yeah, they do a lot of recruiting there. The whole gang is there.
But yeah, so basically, you know, football, everything you're doing with sports is a grind. That created, you know, the grind mindset. And, you know, I was successful in football. I was captain in high school, went on to play in college. Actually, so I had good grades in high school. And that kind of hurt me, I'd say, in terms of my football career, because my coaches wanted me to go to like a good academic school. So I went to Ithaca College, which was like a good, it was top 25 physical therapy school, but as a Division III school, I wanted to go to like, you know, LSU, Alabama, one of those things. I don't know. I would have had to walk on to the team. I think if I walked on, it would have worked out, blah, blah, blah. But anyways, I ended up going to the school. I played there. I was playing freshman year, which is kind of why I went, because I wanted to play immediately. I got into a physical therapy program just off the jump, and it was a six-year program. So 6 years, I get my doctorate of physical therapy. Graduated undergrad, still had 2 more years. I couldn't play after those 2 years of grad school, but I actually tried out for some NFL teams. I was in the loop, had the combine, all of that. Didn't get picked up. You know, that situation is crazy. To get picked up by an NFL team, you got to be top of the top. Continued with the physical therapy. I graduated in 2018. Yeah, really with that, I say all of the grind, the mindset really came from football. So that's why I started off with that. August of 2018, right out of school, I was thinking I wanted to work with sports still because that was my background. I got an internship with the San Francisco Giants, and I was working with them for a whole summer for after like spring training up until August. And working with them, had me realize I don't want to work with a team, with a sports team, because my whole life was dedicated to them. Right.
Wow.
So every single day, all right, say I'm working right now, I wouldn't know my schedule for tomorrow until midnight tonight. They send you a text like, practice is 2 p.m. tomorrow, be there an hour and a half before. And at the time, I also had the clothing line. So I started the clothing line in my last year of grad school. My business partner started it. I got on with him after like 5 months of him doing it and brought it to my school. It popped off at my school. So now I'm doing all of this with juggling grad school. But everything's working. It's all part of one plan.
How did you get connected with the Giants?
It was like an opportunity you just apply for. Like, and there was hundreds of applications and they brought it down to final three. And again, I thank football because my football resume is what separated me from the average person that applied for that. And like my resume was pretty stacked. Like I was basically the perfect candidate, like everything you look for. Like I had good grades. I was doing a lot of volunteer stuff. I was captain of my college football team, like worked out with NFL teams. I had Canadian Football League offers. I didn't take them because I would have had to stop physical therapy school. Yeah, I was doing personal training at the time. I had my CSCS, which is like your certified strength and conditioning coach. I basically filled off all the criteria and I'm a personable person. All the guys were like either my age or a few years older or a few years younger. So it's like basically you there with your bros. To this day, I'm still best friends with a lot of those baseball players. Like I was going out with them. We was going to the club. That would have been my whole entire life.
That's crazy, man. Like that's one of the reasons why, you know, I really enjoy interviewing people. So I even want to take it further back. You say you played for the Rifles, right? You know, Coach Rufus and Coach Barnett. I know both of those people.
Rufus and Barnett like 2 weeks ago.
And that's so funny because we talk about this all the time in entrepreneurship is I think growing up in New York and growing up in Queens means you was going to Roy Wilkins. What I say, a big part of my story of what gave me discipline to become the person of who I am today is sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe sports for a young black man coming up in Queens, that creates a lot of discipline. Would you say you feel that sports kept you out of trouble?
I would not be where I am today if it was not for sports. Could be because it taken me out of trouble. But even what you talk about with discipline, like there's so much things with character building and integrity and accountability. And if you want to be great in sports, you're going to have to put the work in. And that mindset transitions to anything you do in life, because no matter what you do in life, if you want to be great, you've got to put the work in. And most of the times, the work that you put in for these other things is not going to be as hard as the work you put in for sports, because sports is physically demanding. And your body, you over here killing your body. Your body is telling you, bro, I cannot do this no more. So not only is it a physical battle, but it's a mental battle. Now you transition into the business world. You just got to have that same mindset of, all right, I want to be the best. So I just got to do this and that. For real, most people, if you want to be successful, you know what you got to do. You just got to do it.
And that's the key. Most people won't do it.
Right.
What position did you play?
I was a corner. I played running back in high school, but in college, they just had me at corner. They kind of violated. I went there and thought I was a running back. And they were like, well, if you want to play right now, you got to be a corner. I said, I'm a transfer. They said, go ahead.
It's funny that because being a corner, from what I remember, is like you're really on an island. Like you're really by yourself and you got to keep your eyes open. Mm-hmm. And it's basically similar to being an entrepreneur. It's like, yo, you on an island. If they go past you, that's it.
Right. That's it. Game over. Touchdown. The other team is winning.
Malik, I got a quick question. Just so our listeners know, in the beginning of you talking, you were saying that you're not going back to work. You know, could you give us a backstory? So like, are you working right now? Or are you doing a full-time entrepreneur?
So actually, when I said this corona thing changed my life for the better. So right before, at the beginning of March, before this corona really hit, I was working full-time as a physical therapist. Well, I was working at two different spots because I had one spot that was like professional athletes and it was like a private studio. So I was getting like a lot of great experience there, but the hours wasn't crazy. And then the other spot I had was more like my moneymaker, where I was just working hours and seeing like a lot of volume. Both places I was getting, you know, good pay for a physical therapist. Look it up, whatever the average is, but it's good coming out. With all of that stuff, your time is your money. You're getting an hourly pay. When COVID hit New York, both locations had to close. It's just like any place else, like a barbershop or a gym or anything like that. So now I'm over here, I'm on furlough, I'm getting unemployment, which is a great thing for me because now I'm like, I'm getting unemployment, but I can do my entrepreneur stuff. This whole time, while I'm doing my physical therapy, working my full time, I'm doing my business on the side. And a lot of the stuff you see with entrepreneurship and a lot of the things that you'll hear from people that are entrepreneurs are like, you'll know it's time to commit fully to entrepreneurship when you make like, there's a certain calculation they say, like when you can double your expenses from what you get in your entrepreneurship. So what, say your bills and stuff, say you have $1,000 in bills a month. When you can make $2,000 a month and from your entrepreneur business, that's when it's time to leave your business or your day job. Now, I'm not working. I'm getting unemployment. I got all the time in the world. I'm like, let me put in all the time I can into this, my side business, right? I'm doing that and I'm realizing like, yo, I'm putting in all this time when I would have been at work and I'm getting paid more than my job would have paid me. The thing is, it's exponentially increasing. When you go to work, no matter what your salary is capped off. They only going to pay you so much. Mind you, they can afford to pay you this because you're making way more than that for their company. Let's just say I was making $10 an hour working 40 hours a week. They got to pay me $400 a week. If I was doing entrepreneurship, like fully, that 40 hours of my time, if I can make more than $10 for each hour I put in, there's no reason to really go back to it. And the thing is, I was even thinking like, oh, maybe I'll go back and maybe I won't work as much. And then I'll try to, you know, still grow the business, but I'm not even going to do that to myself because I know like it's not even going to be worth your time.
A lot of people, they have that dream and ambition of, you know, they're working with their job now and they want to do entrepreneurhood. They want to do something on the side, but their main concern is like time. So how do you go about your time when you was, you know, tired from working from at the office for physical therapy? How did you go about, you know, building your business?
I didn't work Fridays. I worked Monday afternoon, Tuesday morning, and then Wednesday, Thursday all day. And when I say Wednesday, Thursday all day, I would leave the house at 5:30 and get home at like 10 p.m. and then still be doing my side stuff after that. But that's the thing. Like, even if you work a regular day, like say 8 hours, right? Say you go to work from 8 to 4 or whatever like that. You're going to come back and then now have to put in your full effort into this side business. You're going to be tired. You could say you're not, but you're going to be a little bit drained. You're not going to be able to put 100% capacity into this side business. And that's the thing. If you're able to put this 100% capacity into it, you'll see what the benefits is going to come out. Because like I was saying before, no matter what you do, if you want to be successful, you got to put the work in. And if you can't put the work in because you're busy working all day somewhere else, your side business is not going to be as successful as it can be. And that's what I'm realizing for myself. It's only been really 3 months now, but I'm telling you, I'm not going back to work, bro. Yeah, it's clipped. They tell you, like, escape the rat race. A lot of these books, I always tell people, read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right? And that's one of the greatest books for an entrepreneur, or even just anybody trying to get in the right frame of mind. But a lot of it tries to tell you to escape the rat race. And I hear it, I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to do that. But this situation forced me to do it. Yeah, now that I see what it really is, that's what it is.
So let's jump into it then. And I want to know, what exactly are you doing? So what's your side business that you turn into your main source of income?
Right. So what my side business was at the time, it's called Savage Ruthers. It's a clothing line. I even got some merch on right here. I know it's a podcast, so y'all not going to see it. But I was doing a lot of this, and I was doing everything that comes with the clothing business, the marketing, the production, the networking. It's a whole lot of things that go into it. Even continuing from that, like I started a do-rag company. It's called Swag Rag. I was just kind of playing around with that, designing do-rags and bonnets. I was selling it locally. I had the website, but I wasn't putting full effort into it. Being that I started Savage Ruthless, been growing that, I knew everything that needed to be done. So it made everything easier for this stuff, right? So now I'm able to kind of scale this a lot faster because I already know like the tricks and the nicks and nats to get things booming. And now also in the next week or 2 weeks or so, I'm starting another business. It's called Malik Dupree. My middle name is Dupree. It's sunglasses. I see KB got the frames on right now. It's fire. Summertime is about to open up. They're going to need the shades.
I want to ask about the swag rack. You said it's a do-rag business. Now, it's crazy that something that's accessory just for, you know, hair care turned into an actual business. So what made you proceed to say, yo, I actually want to start designing my own do-rags? Because, you know, it's been a wave for a little minute now, but what made you take it to the next level?
Yes. So what happened was I saw somebody selling do-rags on Instagram and I bought the do-rags from them. I paid like $20 plus shipping. So like $25, bro. And it was trash. I was tight. And I know for a fact he's selling mad at them. Like it's going out crazy. I'm like, damn. So what if I was the one that's selling them? And honestly, now with the entrepreneurship, now the way I look at things, if I want something, and I see it as something that I like and I'm like dedicated about, because I was just talking to y'all before about all of this. If it's something you dedicated about, you can invest into it and make it a business yourself. And that's what makes it really successful. But you know about it. You know what works. Like I bought this do-rag. I see you got a do-rag on right now. And that's a silky do-rag, right?
Yeah.
The do-rag I bought was a polyester. That's no good, bro. That's no good. So I'm like, all right. Let me figure out how to get these do-rags exactly how I want them. And what I did was I went on Instagram. I went on the wave pages. There's pages that just have all the wavers on there. I just started following them, messaging them like, yo, I see you spinning, bro. Just started this company. What I did, I said the product cost $25, but I marked them down to $15. Really, I'm getting them for like $5. Yeah, so then I'm messaging everybody and the sales is going crazy. And then now the wave community is catching on board. And I'm starting to build a name for it.
You said so many important things. You know, as an entrepreneur, I think I like exactly what you just said, is that if you see something and you like it, instead of buying it, your thought process is like, let me invest in it and see how I could my own. That's different. Not a lot of people think like that. And that's one of the big things that, you know, me and KB, that's how we moving now. It's like, you know, we're not trying to just go after something as a consumer anymore. We used to think like consumers, but now as entrepreneurs, we got to think like producers. I love that approach. So if you could tell, you know, the listeners, what's the wave community? So like, what does that mean?
Anybody that's a waver. You know, anybody that has waves in their head, they're a part of the wave community. And it's very strong on Instagram because for real, it's mostly just black people. There are white people that have waves. There's a few of them. But for real, if you got waves, you're black. So especially they support black owned. The do-rags, like you can go to a beauty supply store and get the basic ones. But the ones I'm selling is like designer, Louis V, Gucci. You feel me? And they're silky. So they're the best quality do-rags, the best design. So it's like, oh yeah, of course I need that. Good price.
KB and I, we both wear do-rags. We both black men that care about our hair. Like, what makes your do-rags different? Because I just bought 5 do-rags like a month ago. And if I knew that the separation of your do-rags, like I'm more than happy to show love.
Right. So, I mean, the main thing you want to do when you get a do-rag, it got to be silky. That's the only thing. The main thing that I try to do as well with my website that has been the best thing for me, I try to offer every single thing wave related. So I offer the brushes, the combs, well, different types of brushes because different types of hair length, you need soft, medium, hard brushes. So those ones, I offer the comb, the brush cleaner, the moisturizer, the shampoo, the butter for your hair, everything that is related to your hair.
What kind of products would you recommend? So like for anyone who's listening to the podcast that have waves or trying to get waves, Like, is there any type of products you would recommend to them?
Swag Rag products. We got everything you need. Every single thing you need, everything you could think of is right there. You could go on the site and have waves the next day.
Dang, the next day.
You just got the brush for 24 hours. Waving, the wave community too. Waves is really all about brushing. The products isn't what's going to make your hair. And that's the main thing too.
Got to put the time in.
Right. Exactly. It's like the people that spinning for real, that's how you respect them, because you know they put the time in, they put the work in. The way to make your business very successful, not just regular successful, find a niche and stick to it. So even one thing I'm working on with Savage Ruthless right now, we're transitioning from a regular urban streetwear company to more workout focused, because there's less competition in the workout field. And at the end of the day, the people that work out, they're savages. As the company grew, we were avoiding that because we were like, all right, we don't want to put a title on. We don't want to be known as like a workout company. We want to basically keep our audience broad so anybody can buy it. But that's almost the wrong mindset to think of, because look at Nike. Nike's a workout company to their roots, but everybody buy Nike. You feel me? You don't got to work out to buy Nike. One way you could think about it real quick, I don't know if y'all remember Tap Out. It was like back when high school. Yeah, it was like an MMA brand. People were buying Tap Out. Black people has never worked out, never did no MMA wrestling stuff. They was buying Tap Out because the designs are cool. So that's not saying I'm into MMA, but it's like you build your brand, you focus on your niche. And then from there, the niche is going to explode it, because the people in that niche is going to be heavily supportive of it.
I love that. I don't want 100 different customers. I want the same customer 100 times. Definitely, you know, my exact sentiments are when it comes to branding. But I want to know about Savage Ruthless a little bit, because I was going through Instagram and the parties be crazy. Like, Project X parties, like Savage Ruthless for real. Like, I want to know, like, what drives people to the brand? Like, what gets them going?
So even when talking about our niche, our market was college students. And at the time, like, I was in college when I started my business. My business partner was in college too. And we both liked to turn up. That stuff we was doing. So when I first started, when I brought Savage Ruthless to Ithaca, how I really made it pop, I was a bartender at the time. You know, I'm Jamaican. You got like 20 jobs, right?
Late Jamaican too, so he know.
Yeah, for real. You be working nonstop. That's that Jamaican mentality.
It's in the blood. It's in the blood. That's all.
Yadman. Yeah, so I was a bartender. And then I talked to the bar because, all right, this is what I did. I finessed. So I'm a grad student now. This is my sixth year. I've been there for, you know, I had 5 years already. This is my sixth year. All the regular bars, like, there'd be mad freshmen in there. So there was one bar, and it was known as a gay bar. So nobody went in there. Within 2 months, it was the spot to be at. They did one night a month where it was like a drag night. But besides that, they let me do whatever I wanted. They gave me a healthy Christmas bonus, but they was letting me, the best part, they let me have Savage Ruthless parties there. They wouldn't charge me nothing. Yeah, and I could do whatever promotion-wise. So everybody was like, oh, we need to go there for Savage Ruthless nights. And I was getting videographers there. Nobody in college was getting videographers to shoot these parties, you know? Like, the parties be lit, but no videographers. So that was, like, the main part of the branding. So I'm like, all right, we're going to market it as, like, a college brand that turns up. That's what the focus was before. And we're still going to do a lot of that, but we're going to refocus it to workout, because that's kind of a more sustainable clientele.
I just want to point something out to the listeners, that you saw opportunity when nobody else saw it. And then you went with it and you conquered it and you created something out of nothing. And I think that's the dope part about your story, as of just hearing more about you, is that you take everything that you have and you use it to your advantage. And you capitalize on it. And a lot of times we always feel like we don't have enough. And the favorite saying is that you don't lack resources, you lack resourcefulness. And just from hearing your story, it's just crazy, bro. Because like everything that you had in front of you, you just used it to get you to the next level.
And the thing is too, what I tell people Like, if you're thinking about doing something, stop thinking about doing it and just do it. Because as you do it, you're going to figure things out. Like, along my process, it might sound like I know what I was doing, but there's a lot of things I know and a lot of things I figured out just because it became the next challenge. And like, you have to attack the challenges just as if it's anything else that's part of your daily life. People be stopping their own success because they're afraid to go into something because they don't know how to do it. But if they were to really just commit to it, they'd figure it out.
And I got a question, Malik. So as entrepreneurs, right, we understand mm-hmm. that there are things or people you got to get rid of in mm-hmm. order to be successful or to hit your goals. So in your journey in entrepreneurship, who did you have to get rid of, or what did you have to get rid of to get you to where you at right now?
I think a lot of it is priorities. The biggest thing that I got rid of was video games. I was the nicest gamer. Nobody could see me in 2K. Nobody could see me in Call of Duty. I'm talking mess, but you know, for real, like, all right, if you play in video games, 2 hours worth of video games go by in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
You feel me? Right. That's 3 games of 2K or something like that, maybe 4. But even that's not really nothing. And all of that time and effort that you put into that, we're really not getting paid for that. If you are, put your effort into it. Go do it. But for the average person, and that's why I tell a lot of my friends too, like, you're wasting a lot of time that you could be making a lot of money, because that time add up. And there's games you could look at your log, and I had games where I had weeks of gameplay, not hours, not like 24 hours of gameplay. I had like 1,000 hours of gameplay. I'm not even lying, bro. And that's time. If you put that towards a craft, your life is just gonna be so, like, that's just gonna benefit your life so much more. And it's the same thing like we said from the beginning. Whatever you want to do, you got to put the work in.
And then I got another follow-up question real quick. So to go back to the do-rag company, right? In my head, I'm like, you know, is there even a market for do-rag? Like, is people even making money selling do-rag? So for our listeners, you know, is there a market? Is it a profitable industry?
There's a market for anything you want to make, because there is a big business that is selling it. And you could go to any beauty supply store, they'll have, you know, hundreds of do-rags, right? But if people know you as the person that's selling do-rags, first off, people are going to support you. Second off, as you get a name more and more, like, it starts to become known as like the place to get it, right? So even right now, I'm telling y'all, all right, I'm about to start a sunglass company. Like, I'm not guaranteed that it's going to be successful, but I already know as I continue to do this, the network for it will grow. People going to, you know, KB going to have a pair on, going to look fly in a picture. They're going to be like, yo, KB always got these fire glasses on. Where you get that from? Oh, yeah, this one right here. Go check it out. And it builds through that. I'll tell y'all, between us on this podcast, the do-rag so far this month has made just about $20,000.
Wait, we only, hold on. We only 18 days in the month.
Yeah, a little bit more than 1,000 a day. So that's what I'm telling you. Get that niche and it is going to feed itself.
Wait, hold on. So you mean to tell our listeners that you made almost $20,000 in 18 days selling do-rags?
Yes.
Look at this. As we look at my phone right now, 3 new orders just came in. So even on this call right now, as we've been speaking, I've been making money.
So entrepreneurhood,
that's what it's about. And you talk about things that's, what, this is under what, $15, $20?
The do-rags I sell, the silky do-rags, I sell them for $9. The designer do-rags, I sell them for $14. If anybody wants to start a do-rag company, go to your beauty supply store. You can buy do-rags for $3, right? Even if I said I sell them for $9, that's triple your profit right there.
So, free game.
Right. And mind you, I'm not even getting them for $3 because I'm getting them from overseas, so they're cheaper. Simple as that. Whatever you get, buy it if there's people that are, this is kind of random, I wouldn't really recommend anybody to do drop shipping. That's more research y'all can do if y'all want, because drop shipping, put a product online and they send it from China. It takes like 4 to 6 weeks, and that's not good for customer service. I try to ship things out the same day or the next day that people order it, because people want it right now. They order something today, they want it the day they order it, even though they're not coming to pick it up and they live in California.
That's millennials. So how do you manage to run these businesses? Do you have a team that you work with, or just everything just from you?
So with the Swag Rags, it's just me. With the Savage Ruthless, I have a business partner and a few more people that are involved with that. Definitely, to make things successful, the team is what is the most important thing, because you can't do everything on your own. You could want to do everything on your own. And at the end of the day, having employees is profitable than the work that you're going to put in. Because even say you're paying somebody minimum wage, right? You're giving them $15 for an hour worth of work. The things that they're going to do in an hour is going to bring you in more than $15. You feel me? It's kind of like what I was saying about before. Like, I'm not going back to work because now my time isn't even worth that. Like, I don't even want to be in the building having to be there, because I can make more money outside of it, and my efforts are going to be rewarded more if I invest that time into myself.
Yeah. So like, Malik, I think our listeners, man, they're definitely going to take a lot away from this. So to kind of backtrack with you being, you know, having a durag company, what did your family say? Like, you mean to tell me you went to your family and was like, I'm not going to do physical therapy anymore because I'm going to sell durags? And were they supportive of that or what?
The thing is, the numbers don't lie, right? When I showed them that and I showed them why, you know, I could say it and have the idea. If I told them that vision from when I first started it, I would look at myself as crazy too. But if I'm showing them what my normal paycheck is compared to what I'm making selling durags to not even leave my room.
We say men lie, women lie, numbers don't.
That's a fact. That's a fact. The numbers do not lie. And it's crazy though. I actually had to convince my girl about it. Oh, you're a doctor, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, nah, I'm not even trying to do that no more. I kind of even lost the passion towards that. I'm not going to say I worked, but that's what they say. When you find something you enjoy doing, you're not going to work a day in your life, right? I've enjoyed selling durag, talking to all these waivers, getting them to buy some products. And then with the Savage Ruthless, be talking to these workout people, getting them to buy these shirts and shorts. And like you were talking about before, like building that brand, because the brand is what's going to sell itself, not the product, because they understand like the brand behind it. Like me saying, all right, I'm going to start this Malik Dupree. The glasses could be trash. Somebody's going to buy it at least, because they're going to support me. They support the brand. They support the vision. But then when you make a fire on top of that, you know, you make everything around it. Oh, I need it. That's what happens. And you figure it all out along the way.
When you create that demand, that's when, it, you know, it starts clicking. For the motivation part, you've been doing a lot and you plan to keep doing a lot. But what keeps you motivated to for all these endeavors? Like what kind of content that you watch or that you listen to, or what kind of people inspire you, whether you know them or you don't know them personally? Right. What keeps you going?
I love Diddy. I love 50. I just bought a 50 Cent book. I follow a lot of entrepreneurial pages on social media, and it's great because a lot of the stuff that they post is like verification for the process of what you're going through. Because sometimes, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're going through things you don't even know if it's the right thing to be doing. And then when you see these pages of other entrepreneurs, the same things that you're doing in the same mindset, then you're like, all right, now I'm doing the things that's right. Like right now, what I'm really focusing on myself, I don't spend any of this money that I'm telling you I made. The only money I get is whatever money come in from not this. And I'm using that to save up to buy a crib. And I'm trying to get like a 2-family crib. So when I move out, I'm not paying rent. So
there you go.
I have, right? It's all part of the process. It's all part of the journey. A lot of this stuff you could find out there. It's almost like keys on how to be successful. There's like certain steps, the certain things you need to do, or certain decisions you need to make. Things are going to either elevate you or is going to keep you stagnant. Making those right decisions to elevate you for every decision you make.
KB also told me that you give back to the community. What kind of impact do you want to have on your community?
Yeah, so I basically wanted to, when I first came out of college, I was talking all the time about my path of being a doctor. And now I use that, but then I segment it into business. And I always talk about how football took me there because I want to teach young kids how to basically follow in my footsteps or even be able to get there, show them that there's other possibilities in life. I want to be somebody that the youth can look up to as, all right, I can do that as well. You know, because the things that I'm doing, I came from the same place that, you know, we all came from. And it's not like I was put into a situation that other people couldn't. I did certain things that most people wouldn't. But if that's something that you want to do, I want to be able to provide that blueprint. So I go and I talk to schools a lot. I talk to kids a lot. I teach them about the things that I've been doing myself.
And how does it feel to be a doctor at you? How old are you?
Yeah, 25.
Bro, that's crazy. So you're a doctor. You got the title of being a doctor at 25 years old. That's insane.
We actually met at an event for kids. It was like a youth Shark Tank, basically. And they was pitching their ideas. And then on a nonprofit, my guy Dave, is called Showing Hearts Foundation. We gave the prize money to whoever had the best pitch. And you talking about kids that's 10, 11 years old that's doing entrepreneurship. We actually met there, and that's how we connected. Now we hear Entrepreneurhood Podcast.
That was about like a year ago, something like that.
Maybe. Last year. Where do you see, you know, Savage Loafers? What do you see Swag Rag? What do you see the new sunglass company? What do you see yourself in the next 10 years? Like, what can we expect from Malik Morris?
Well, even right now, I'm building everything. So if I look at myself 3 years ago, when a lot of these things were just ideas, now they starting to really start kicking off. I see myself as doing these things and doing a lot more. And these things will be a lot more powerful in their own essence. And the thing is, as you continue to be an entrepreneur, there's opportunities present itself all the time. You know, either one of y'all could be like, yo, bro, love the segment. I was thinking about doing this other business endeavor. Would you want to be a part of it? You know, things like that present itself, and those things, everything keeps elevating you to the next level. It's like your network is your network.
That's right? Money. I was checking out your Instagram and it said that you got 17,000 followers. So how has social media played a part in your business?
Yeah, social media is number one. And I make sure to like show a lot of the process too.
You broke up. Go back to the day process. Understand.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I show a lot of the process because people appreciate that and they respect you a lot more and they want to support you when they see that you're working hard yourself. So I make sure to show like as much as everything that I'm doing behind the scenes, anything grows. I don't really pay for promotion like ads or I don't even know how to market the right way. Just be on social media, guerrilla tactics. And when I say guerrilla tactic, I mean, I'm putting this product in your face. You're going to see it. If you see it and you don't buy it, that's on you. But you're going to know that I put it out there. I'm going to post about it 5 times. Every picture I take, I'm going to be wearing these sunglasses. You feel me? I'm going to post on the story every day. And then when you see me, you're going to be like, yo, bro, yo, I saw you doing your sunglass thing. That's cool. I ain't getting nothing. But, you know, how I look at it. You just got to keep pushing yourself. And that's what I even say for people that don't got 17,000 followers when I didn't. You know, I would always just keep putting it out there. And you can't have no type of feeling like, oh, if this gets no likes, I'm going to take it down. Because at the end of the day, that one like could be a purchase, you know?
That's fearless. And I feel like that's what it takes to be an entrepreneur, because it seems like you don't let the fear of what other people think prevent you from being yourself. So KB got the final question for you.
All right.
Being that you blessed the show with your presence, what does entrepreneurhood mean to you, bro?
Entrepreneurhood, I believe a lot of it is your network. I think as you continue to grow, you continue to give back to your network as well, because a lot of the things that made you successful will grow from that as well. Entrepreneurhood is really just having confidence in yourself and your neighborhood of where you can go, where you can take things, and showing others the path as well.
I love that, bro. Like, just from hearing your story, I'm about to level up my merch. But we appreciate you coming on the show. To all our listeners, there you have it from Dr. Malik Morris, a.k.a. Dr. Guapo. We want you guys to realize that entrepreneurhood is for everyone who actually wants to go out and achieve it, who wants to go get it, and utilize all your resources that you have in front of you to take you to the next level. And whatever you do, just don't stop. Put the work in, like you said. Entrepreneurhood.
That's a fact. I appreciate y'all having me up here.
Anyone can start, but only champions finish. Now that you've completed this episode, you're ready to continue your journey by connecting directly with our hosts of Entrepreneurhood. Follow us on Instagram at The Entrepreneurhood to stay updated with the community. For each episode, the first set of listeners to tag us on Instagram and leave a 5-star review will be entered into a drawing to get a free 1-on-1 coaching session on the topic of entrepreneurship with our hosts. Remember, there is no shame in struggling, because we fail, we grow, and we win. Right here on Entrepreneurhood.